I'm Ruth. Welcome to A Quiet Life. It is very good to be here with you for episode 71 of A Quiet Life. And as I record this, it is Wednesday, the 24th of June, 2020. And I am very pleased to report to you that the theses I was editing are finished and edited and given back to the poor students to work through the issues I've come up with. And it was very hard work, but very satisfying work, bringing order out of chaos is why I like editing the theses. So I'm very happy they're over, but I'm very grateful for them. And I'd also like to report that my daughter's wedding last Saturday was absolutely beautiful. So Jess and Jordan got married in Lake George, and which is, if you don't know, is a dry lake between Canberra and Goulburn. So it was just like a really big paddock, and we could see the windmills, you know, for wind power in the background. And we were watching online, and everyone was watching online, all family and friends. And I really felt part of this huge community that was all over the place. We all took photos of where we were and posted them, and we all shared how we were feeling and shared the excitement. And it just felt like we were all there together. It was just really wonderful. So God was very gracious in that time. And yeah, and Jess was beautiful, just beautiful. She looked like a fairy. She had a little flower coronet on her head, and a beautiful white dress. And Jordan was gorgeous, obviously. And they just was both so happy, and we were so happy, and we've sent them on their way. Jess is now starting a new job in Palm Island in Queensland. We're not really sure how much of their honeymoon they will have to spend quarantined. We'll find that out in a couple of days. At the moment, they're just in New South Wales having a bit of honeymoon time, and then they'll head off to Queensland, and she will start working in a school there. So that's exciting for them. So many big things have happened in the last month, but that's great. I need to share with you that this will probably be the last podcast for a while. I need a little break, holiday, recovery time. I don't have any more interviews to do, and today we're going to put up the last few chapters of my year of saying no. So, that being said, I might, if you've listened to this for a while, you might remember over summer I said I'm going to take a break and I'm going to reevaluate what this podcast is and think about it and stuff, and took a break from the blog as well. And that's all good, but I didn't actually have time over summer to think about it. So some sort of part of my brain thought, oh yes, we'll be traveling in LA, we'll be on holidays, and we can use that time to think and plan. And we didn't really feel like we had any time at all in LA, and because we were just busy seeing people and things and whatever. And wasn't that God's amazing timing that we were in LA in January, just before everything shut down? Glad we're not even thinking about trying to go over there now. It would be impossible. So God was very gracious in that time. But yes, having said all that, yeah, I didn't sort of have time to really think about what I want this podcast to be, or what I want to make of it, or how to get people to listen and all that kind of thing. So I am going to take a break now and hopefully think those things through and come up with a plan. I think what I'll be doing, I hope what I'll be doing as time goes on, is sharing on Facebook and Twitter little snippets of videos, because a lot of these interviews I've videoed, and so it'd be nice to see people's faces, and they'll be shorter snippets that I'll put up. And I'm also planning to put up on YouTube all of my year of saying no as a YouTube thing, but if you've listened to it here, you don't need to see it on YouTube. And I'll also produce it as an audiobook. It's amazing what you can do when you own all your IP. So that'll all happen. But, all of these things, producing the videos and whatever, they all take time. And it's just, I just haven't felt able to do all the bits that I want to do. So I'm going to take some time to do it now. So you'll see bits coming back up, and I might repeat old podcasts, maybe with new introductions, maybe without introductions. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I don't have any new content after today for a while. So I want to say a massive thank you to everyone who has listened so far. I'm not saying goodbye necessarily, but I just want to say thank you, thank you. And I really want to say thank you to a couple of special people. So my friend Jill and Carolyn, who messages me every week and says, what's your podcast going to be about this week? It's just such an encouragement, Carolyn. So thank you. And Sophia, for your encouragement as well. And know that you enjoy listening to my voice. And that's always nice to hear. So thank you for your encouragement. And we'll see where this goes. You can pray that God shows me where things go. So anyway, that's really where I'm at. And thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy these last couple of chapters rounding out my year of saying no, and the lessons that I learned that year that I've been really enjoying reading through and reapplying to my life now, and I hope that they're helpful to you, and I will chat to you just to say a final farewell at the end of this chapter. November. I find myself alone in a park overlooking the river. The water is completely calm, and the slight breeze is fluttering a flag flying above a boat repair place in front of me. I can hear birds singing and gulls crying to each other. I slow down enough to watch birds sipping nectar from flowers, and then slow down more to notice the insect life crawling around me. Then I think of the insects crawling on me, and the moment gets significantly less restful. I write for a bit, then go to meet a friend for coffee. November is all about slowing down. I feel so much relief as the teaching completely stops. I also feel a little lost. Time feels loose and difficult to pin down. My self-confidence lowers as I'm no longer busy and important, but just me. I need a new routine, but I realise this won't be possible until after the Christmas madness passes. I have more brain space, I am exercising more, eating better, getting little tasks done that have been weighing on my mind for literally years. I swing back and forth between hope that my new life will be wonderful and fear that it will end up being just the same as my old life and that I'll never cope with anything. I need to take the time to adjust and move forward, one foot in front of the other. Chapter 14. Rest. Okay, let's get serious now. We all know that we only have 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week, and that how you live your moments is how you live your days. And therefore, everything we do needs to be full of meaning, pushing our lives, however, incrementally in the right direction and mindful. Right? Well, depending on your understanding of what I've just written, there could be something missing from the picture. What about play? You know, the act of doing something fun, alone or with friends or family, that doesn't go anywhere, that isn't part of any great plan? What about board games, or throwing a frisbee on the beach, or building things from Lego? My grandmother lived to the ripe old age of 99 and 11 twelfths. She just missed her 100th birthday by about 5 weeks. In her later years, she took up painting. She had a little table set up with her watercolours and brushes, and she painted all the time, mostly English or Australian countrysides, pictures that she liked from magazines or photographs. But the paintings were not great masterpieces, and they were never going to be great masterpieces. No matter how much she painted, it was not going anywhere. None of them would be money makers. It didn't matter. That's not why she painted. In this era of entrepreneurship, we are often encouraged to monetize our hobbies and passions, and I can understand that. I'm trying to do that right now with writing. But I think we can go too far and start to stress that all our activities must be worthwhile in some sense. That if we're reading, the books must be great literature that will expand our brain. If we're on the computer, we must be working or reading the news. That our outside play must be exercise. That our baking must be time spent investing in our children. I think it's important to put time aside just for play. I'm not good at this, mind you. I've tried various hobbies in my life and dropped most of them because I couldn't bear spending money on something that didn't lead anywhere. I write lists of jobs for my weekend and feel righteous if I've accomplished them all. And I'm not good with spontaneous happenings. I don't spontaneously go and watch a movie or invite friends for a night of board games. So I've come up with a compromise. On the weekends, I set aside part of Saturday as a time for planned spontaneity. Moz and I may take that time and go for a drive somewhere and visit touristy shops, or have lunch in a cafe, or find a beach to take a walk along. We enjoy these mini adventures. But we also might not go. Depending. I'm also reading more. Novels, memoir, whatever takes my fancy. Not research for my writing, but just anything I like. And I watch a little TV and I surf a little Facebook. I know that, like anything, this can get out of balance. We've been told for years that we're all watching too much TV, and social media can be a huge time suck as well. Boundaries need to be put in place, and some of our play needs to not involve screens at all. Non-screen play tends to be more refreshing, I think, and most of what we do should move us in the right direction. But I think it's a good idea when you're setting up your time budget to allocate a little time to play. It's a necessary part of life. When I started working at the university on short-term contracts, I had a plan. I would say yes to as many things as possible and make myself indispensable, and then they would have to keep renewing my contracts and I would be as good as permanent. I didn't say it was a good plan. You see, the problem with thinking like that is that when the time came this year when I really needed to take a break, I didn't feel like I could because I had made myself indispensable. I felt like things would fall over if I took so much as a week off. And so I came close to exhaustion. I think it must be a personality type thing for me or something. I like being friends with people, but what I really like is being needed. I love being the one people turn to in a crisis. I love it so much until I don't. I love it until I am tired and I really need a break, but there's no one else who can take the load. It's pride, people. Plain and simple. None of us can carry that burden. I'm not meant to be the one solving everyone's problems. I'm not meant to be the sole provider of friendship to people or the sole dispenser of wisdom. It works much better if everyone does their little bit than if I feel, even mistakenly, that it all depends on me. One of the things that can help stop me from continually falling into this trap is the practice of regularly taking one day off a week. It's a discipline that helps put everything back into order, that gives a regular reset of the brain. When I was working full-time, a Sabbath for me meant a day when I didn't do any paid work. I would make sure that I didn't do any work at all as a statement of faith that God would either make it okay that the work didn't get done, or make me cope with the fact that disaster happened. It was amazing how little disaster did happen. In fact, I can't think of one time when taking a whole day off work for the week led to a crisis. What it usually led to was a rested, more competent, more peaceful me. And that was a very good thing. Now that my work consists of 2 days of paid work and the rest of the time trying to get my own business off the ground, I think I might find it a little harder to take a break, harder to trust that it will all be okay. But I want to all the same, because I want to remember that it's not all about me, about my business. I don't want to disappear into the rabbit hole of entrepreneur burnout. So what does a Sabbath, a weekly day off, look like? I don't believe that a Sabbath needs to always be taken on a Sunday. I don't think that we need to spend the day sitting quietly and reading religious texts. I love the idea of preparing meals and such beforehand and not doing any work at all, but I don't think that is achievable for most of us. And for some of us, doing housework and cooking is a way to relax, a different way of being than we have for the rest of the week at work. When Moz and I were doing missions training, back in the day, before we were married, we took Sundays off. We would go to an early church service and then we would just spend time together, chatting, maybe exploring the neighbourhood. We didn't even have to cook meals because we were living in a missions community. It was a true day off. Now life looks different for us. Yesterday, for me, the day off meant that I did a whole lot of washing and went grocery shopping and spent a few hours in the kitchen cooking up a proper meal for my family. I tried out a couple of new recipes and I enjoyed the creativity. I read a book and I topped the day off by watching a mindless chick flick. Eugene Peterson describes his Sabbath in his book, The Pastor. When he was a pastor, he would take a day off each Monday, and he wrote to his congregation to explain what he was doing and why. He and his wife would pack a lunch and go for a bushwalk each Monday. Or a hike, I guess. He was in America. Here in Australia, we would call it a bushwalk. For the morning, they would walk in silence, just taking the time to process the week that had come before. But when they broke for lunch, they would talk to each other, and they would keep talking all the way home. Christine Rush just happened to talk about her weekly day off in her blog the week I was writing this. She writes that she takes the day off from work and that she has a no screen rule with that day off. No email, no iPad, no laptop, she writes. Phone with me, but set on do not disturb, except for the handful of people who call in for an emergency. She also writes, by the way, that once she started doing this resting, her productivity increased because her stress levels went down. Perhaps if you are parents of small children, your day off would include meeting another family at a park for a play, or possibly taking your kids to one of those indoor play centres so that you can sit and read with a nice coffee. Perhaps it means using disposable nappies for one day a week so that you can take one day off the washing. There are many options, and it's not a one-size-fits-all deal, but however you put it together, I encourage you to take time off somehow to rest and rejuvenate each week. How do you take a day off? What would your perfect Sabbath look like? Chapter 15. How to help others say no. I've talked in this book about organising time, about figuring out priorities, about making rules beforehand so that we don't have to make yes or no decisions on the fly, about pushing ourselves sometimes, and resting regularly. I want to finish with something that came up the other day when I was chatting to some good friends over lunch. We were talking about the blog, and the conversation moved to discussing methods of asking people to do things in such a way that they feel free to say no. It got me thinking about things from the other side of the fence, and I thought I'd explore the idea. An interesting thing changed for me as I wrote the blog series. People started to change the way they were asking me to do things. They would preface the request with, "You can say no, but..." "You can say no, but would you like to come to the quiz night on Saturday?" "Feel free to say no, but would you like to be a part of this fundraiser?" "I know you'll probably say no, but there's a dinner on and I'd love you to come." It's been wonderful. My friends are so great. They can see that I'm working on something here, and they are trying to help. Some requests are not so easy to refuse. I think one of the worst ways of being asked is this. "What are you doing on March the 21st? This method of asking assumes that if there is nothing booked into your calendar, then you are available for whatever event the person is asking you to. However, what if there is nothing booked into your calendar because you need the day off as a rest day? Or sometimes you even need to wait and see. If the week before turns out to be huge, then maybe you need to turn the event down. Now this is difficult because sometimes the person asking really needs to know how many people are attending an event so that they can plan properly. And sometimes people are putting off answering because they are waiting to see if a better offer arrives, and that's, honestly, a little rude. Tasmanians have a dreadful habit of booking tickets to things at the very last moment. We've had some big-name performers cancel their tours because people couldn't make up their minds whether or not they wanted to come. I guess this is another place where there needs to be a bit of balance. Having said that, I still think there's a better way of asking. How about, "Hey, could you check your calendar and get back to me? I'd love to invite you to this thing on March 21st if you would like to come. I need to know numbers by the 20th of February. Or, "I'd really like to get together with you for dinner. I know you're busy, but I'm free on these days. Would you be able to make it on any of those? Or maybe you could suggest one that works for you. I don't mind how long I have to wait. I'd just like to spend time with you." Or, "There's this really great event happening that I'm sure you'd like. Have a think about it and get back to me." I can see a pattern in these invitations. They all give the invited person time to think. This may purely be my introverted nature, but I really hate being put on the spot. I like to have a chance to think about anything before I give an answer. So maybe this is what we can do. Give our friends time to think and the freedom to say no without guilt. December. So here I am, writing this at the very end of December 2017, wondering what the new year will bring. I read a book about starting your own business last week as I lay on the couch ailing with the flu and wishing that my energy levels would return. They have today. It said that one mistake people make when starting their own business is that they think they will have more time. That people start running their own business so that it will give them more time. They said it won't. That you will have less time, not more, running your own business. Ouch! I mentioned it to Moz, feeling quite concerned. I mean, what have I made all these changes for if nothing will actually get better? But he brought his wisdom to the situation. He said, more time for what? That's the point, really, isn't it? We all have the same amount of time. We all have the same 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week. The question is, what do you want to do with it? What do I want more time to do? I want more time to write, more time to read. So I am starting a business that will require me to spend more time writing and more time reading. It will look like I'm working, but I'll be doing what I want to do. I want more energy to be able to use the time I have, and I think that the changes I have made will give me more energy as I work more by myself and give out less to students. I hope so, anyway. I'm not stupid enough to think that I have now cleared the clouds and that my life will be easy from here on. I don't even think my life will be simple from here on. There will be difficult decisions to make. There will be priorities to define. There will be times when I'm exhausted and times when I'm full of energy. And that's just me. I will also need to take into account Moz's needs, my parents' needs, my friends, my children. I don't live in a vacuum, and I'm really glad I don't. But I hope that as I put into practice what I have learned in this year of saying no, I will be able to fulfill more of the purpose I was put on this earth to fulfill. And that, my friends, is exciting. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey. I pray that each of us grows in wisdom about when to say no and when to say yes, so that our lives fill up with meaning, joy, and peace. I hope that you also will find and continue to move into fulfilling your potential. Here's to saying no. You can find me online and sign up to my writer newsletter at ruthamos.com.au, or you can find the blog at aquietlifeblog.wordpress.org. I look forward to hearing from you. So there you go. That's the end of my year of saying no, and I want to just give you some feedback, I guess, that yes, in the past 2 years, I have had a very full life. I am doing all kinds of bits and pieces, and I am enjoying it, and I am feeling like what I'm doing is a bit more congruent with who God has made me to be. But yes, I'm also on a journey, still trying to figure things out, as is obvious from the intro to today's podcast and the out bit as well. But yes, I am still asking him what's next and what he wants me to do. So this will be it for the podcast for a while, but you can still find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author, or write to me ruth@ruthamos.com.au, or find me Twitter at A Quiet Life, although, as I say, I'm not there very much. But I will be very happy to talk to you about anything, and I hope that I will still be communicating in little bits and pieces and putting things up for you to listen to or watch or read. So we shall see how that all goes as I keep walking this journey and seeing what should be on my plate and what shouldn't be on my plate and all that kind of thing. I hope that that my year of saying no that you've listened to has been helpful to you in sorting out your own life and what God's calling you to. I really do believe that God calls us to a life that is suited to us, that he has a purpose and a plan for each one of us, and that we need to step into it. I also believe that it's difficult sometimes to figure out what that thing is, and that it takes a bit of walking and testing and trying and doing bits and pieces, and that sometimes life is going to be really full, and at other times life is going to be really restful. But however it goes, isn't it wonderful that we can just hold God's hand and walk into the journey that he has for us? As always, I want to especially thank Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for this podcast. And I want to say, God bless you. Stay well and stay with him. And I'm sure I will chat to you later.